Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Since 1962, readers have been embracing the adventures of Meg Murray, her brother Charles Wallace, and their friend Calvin O'Keefe as they set off across time and space in the book A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline Alingal. A new movie adaptation opens next week.
Imagine that the ant here wants to get to her other hand.
The quickest option is to walk across the street.
But it turns out a straight line is not the shortest distance between two points. Not if you use a fifth dimension.
It's outside of the rules we know of time and space. So the ant arrives in my hand instantaneously.
So you fall to space.
More likely wrinkle it.
This classic book is one that many people point to as an important touchstone from childhood. And this hour, we're going to talk about this and other touchstones, the books that shaped us as young readers. And we want to hear from you. What book was most important to you as a child or a teen, and why? You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today is Sarah Prineas. She is a middle grade and young adult author, best known for the Magic Thief trilogy, and she also sells books at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Charity. It's nice to be here. I can't believe you asked people to choose just one book.
That's pretty unfair. I know. Most of us will not actually follow that rule, I'm sure. So understand that it's a loose guideline. Jerry Hyde is also here. She is the Youth Services Manager at the Ames Public Library. Hello, Jerry.
Well, hi there. Thank you for inviting me. And I agree with Sarah that it's very unfair just to ask for one, because I have different ones that were important, all different types of times in my life.
Right. As you grow and develop, a book can really move you at a certain age, and then sometimes you grow beyond that book, don't you?
Yep, and then sometimes you grow backwards.
Right. Well, let's start with talking about A Wrinkle in Time, because this is a book that has been so important to so many readers. And Sarah, I know it was an important book to you when you were a kid. Why do you think it spoke to you?
I write science fiction and fantasy. And when you talk to other fantasy writers, especially women, they point to that book as the formative book. And I think the reason it was for them and also for me is because we were Meg Murray. And if you look at A Wrinkle in Time, you look at the first chapter of that book. I don't know if you guys remember that the first line of that book is the classic, "It was a dark and stormy night." And there's a storm going on outside of Meg's house, but the storm's really going on inside her, because she's rebellious, she's fighting with her classmates, her father's missing, her brother's being bullied, all of these things going on. Plus, she's brilliant and misunderstood.
Right.
So I think that so many young readers really saw themselves, like girls especially, saw themselves in that character. And so that's why what happens in that book is that all of her like liabilities at the beginning become her strengths by the end. And so the girls looking at that went, yes, that's me. I'm Meg Murray.
And looking at her, she was not only someone that resonates with the reader, but she also was not so extraordinary that she was outside of a person's reach. I mean, she was very smart, but you don't think, oh, I'm not that smart. And she was a little mousy, and she was very real.
Yeah. She's authentic. She's an authentic character. And I think that's one of the things we're going to point to during this hour, is that the books that like live for people feature characters that feel real and authentic.
Jerry, you want to add anything about A Wrinkle in Time?
Well, I agree with Sarah again. I mean, it's a fabulous book. And I guess I kind of identify myself with Mrs. Watson, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Which I wonder what that tells about me.
Did you as a young reader or now?
I was an older reader, so okay. Not as a young reader. But I also think this has stood the test of time. So not only were Meg back in the 60s, but we're Meg in the 70s and the 80s and the 2000s and 2018.
Well, and I think something else that's exciting about that book is, so obviously the science in the book isn't real, but the scientific ideas are real. I mean, you start down this pathway and the ideas are so big and so exciting. And there's a lot of philosophy. I mean, it's a book that really sets your mind on fire and makes you think, it makes you feel really smart too for thinking.
Not to mention the fact that Meg's mother is a scientist. That kind of blew me away when I read that in the 1970s. Like, wow, she's a woman and she's like a high powered, smart, mathy scientist.
And that's also why it was so challenged back then, too, is because we represented women in a very strong feature in the book and in the fantasy and the science and the Christianity that was part of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a book that I've returned to a couple of different times in my life. I read it as a young teen, and then I read it again in my 20s. I'm not quite sure what prompted that reading. And then I've read it again with my kids. And it's one of those books that really resonates in a different way every time I read it, too. And, you know, Jerry, it's funny that you mentioned that the parents or teachers or other grown-ups were threatened, perhaps, by that book. Is that another thread that you think we'll see as we talk about some of these books that were really powerful when we were young readers, is that they're so powerful that they scare older folks?
Definitely.
So, Jerry, tell me about one of the books that was really powerful for you when you were a kid.
Well, the one that came to my mind, other than Muffy Goes to Kindergarten, when I was a kindergartner, is Johnny Tremaine, The Story of Boston in Revolt.
That's on my list, too.
Yeah, and it's written by Esther Forbes. And it has held, I mean, this is still a book I recommend to boys and girls that are young readers that come into the library. But as I was thinking about, like, why was this book so important to me, and why do I still remember it when there were so many others that I read that I don't remember what I read? And I was thinking about, because I think it was the first time that I really understood and felt empathy for the character, because he burns his hand, and that's the scene I remember, was reading about that his hand was all shriveled and burnt, and I still remember the pain that I feel when I read that section of the
book. Me too. And the other thing about that book is that Johnny Tremaine is not a likable character at the beginning.
No.
He's kind of arrogant because he's talented. And then this happens and you're kind of like, oh, how is he going to lift himself out of this, the pain that you mentioned and the difficulty?
Yeah, because it does definitely change his life. And I think he kind of, it humbled him very much so that he was now not this trendsetter, you know, the talented person that he was, but he is now someone that's struggling and is trying to find his own with this disability.
Have you gone back to that one as an adult, Jerry?
Many years ago. I haven't recently, but many years ago, yes, I read through it again. And again, that scene where you know, it burns his hand, and that I still can feel the I suppose my empathetic feelings for him, that I can feel the pain and feel his hand shrivel. And
I probably haven't read that book in 35 years, and I can still remember that scene.
A very, very visceral moment.
Yes.
Let's get to the phones. People want to share some of their books, and we'll continue talking, of course, about the books that influence the two of you throughout the hour and what makes a book so powerful. You can give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. David is on the line in Ankeny. Hi, David. David, are you there? All right. We don't seem to have David on the line. Mary's on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Mary.
Hi. You were talking about the reality of the characters. Mary Poppins is the one that resonates with me still. And the thing that's interesting about it, I think, is that Mary Poppins wasn't really kind. She was self-centered. And she was, but she was magical. I mean, there was a special quality about her. And later on, I wanted to read it to my granddaughter, and I started to, and my granddaughter said, oh, there were no twins in that. And that doesn't sound right. And I thought, oh, my God, she saw the film. And the film, she never would read Mary Poppins. The film absolutely destroyed it for her. And the character in the film, because I saw that too, was very different. I mean, the spoonful of sugar and all that kind of stuff. It just, you know, Mary Poppins was kind of my introduction to adults. She was very peculiar in her own way, and she had a lot of peculiar friends, which was quite wonderful and remains wonderful to me today.
Well, why do you think that book in particular stays with you?
Interesting. I think because it was the first. I was a good reader, and I read over my age, and I think I had read kind of baby books until I got all of a sudden opened up Mary Poppins, and it was wow. Reality all of a sudden, but a kind of reality that wasn't real, that was very special. Also, too, I think Mary Poppins had some of the, my mother had some of the qualities of Mary Poppins, and I didn't see it at the time, but as I look back and think about it, I see it now.
Oh, interesting. Well, Mary, thank you so much for calling and sharing.
Okay.
Thanks Bye-bye. A lot. Yep. And I think P.L. Travers would also have felt that the movie ruined her character as well, although I love movie Mary Poppins. So.
Can we just talk about Julie Andrews for a second?
Sure.
Because I don't know if a lot of people know this, but Julie Andrews is also, she played Mary Poppins, of course, in the movie, but she was also a children's book writer. And as Julie Andrews Edwards, she wrote a whole bunch of really memorable, wonderful children's books.
Well, and we're going to take a short break, but we'll come back. We'll talk about at least one of those books
Yay.
In just a moment. We are talking about some of the books that really shaped us as young readers, and we want to hear about your books, your touchstones at 866-780-9100. Sarah Prineas is here. She is an author best known for the Magic Thief trilogy and works at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Jerry Hyde is the Youth Services Manager at Ames Public Library. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the books that shaped us as young readers, and we want to hear from you. What book or books were really important to you as you were growing up? What books really changed your ideas about life or your ideas about yourself? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jerry Hyde is with us. She's the Youth Services Manager at the Ames Public Library. Sarah Prineas is here. She is an author best known for her Magic Thief trilogy. She sells books at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. And just before the break, you brought up Julie Andrews or Julie Andrews Edwards, mm-hmm. who has written a number of books for kids. And in particular, one of them was pretty important to you. Tell me about it.
Yeah, pretty key formative books. And I was thinking about the books that we've mentioned so far. Jerry mentioned this before, that a lot of these books are about kids who are finding their place. And there's the book by Julie Edwards, Mandy, is exactly about that. It's about an orphan girl. She lives in an orphanage and she climbs the wall and she goes out and finds this abandoned cottage and sort of renovates it by herself and eventually finds a home. And it sort of speaks to that longing, I think, that all children have to find their place, even if it's just a small place. And it's not a big earth-shaking finding your family or, like Meg Murray, traveling through time to find your father and stuff like that. So that's one of the ones that I read and reread and went back to. And you know what? It holds up.
So, you know, you mentioned authenticity of character. That's mm-hmm. something that a lot of these books have in common. Jerry mentioned that they get older folks upset for various reasons. But another thing that a lot of these books have in common. I mean, you just mentioned something, though, Sarah. So many of these books that we'll be talking about this hour revolve around a child who has to be self-sufficient for some reason. Now, Mandy, I think she was an orphan, mm-hmm. as so many great book characters are. But that idea of self-sufficiency is something that really excites kids, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm looking at my list, and a bunch of the books that I look back to are about kids who are alone, placed in situations where they have to prove that they're competent. So like Julie of the Wolves, by Jean mm-hmm. Craighead George, or the one that my kids' book groups loved, My Side of the Mountain. Mm. Do you guys remember
one? And that's so Julia of the Wolves, she is an Inuit girl who goes off into, she has to live on the tundra, mm-hmm. and she gets kind of taken in, incorporated into a pack of wolves, mm-hmm. and then also has to deal with returning to society, which mm-hmm. is the hardest part of that book. Then My Side of the Mountain, this young man goes out to live in the wilderness, carves a home out of a giant tree.
He's like super uber competent.
It's almost a little too easy at times. I'm like, dude, that's...
But you know what? Every single kid that has read that book loves it. Yep. Like passionately. I've seen a kid in Prairie Lights like find that book and hug it to their chest. Like they love that book. The other one that came to mind was Scott Odell's Island of the Blue Dolphins, where you have another story of a girl alone on an island trying to survive. And that just really speaks to kids. That's not their lives mostly. Maybe they're trying to survive in different ways, but those kinds of books, boy, really resonate.
And, you know, another one that came along after we were kids, but seems to really resonate in a similar way, is Hatchet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is a boy who winds up alone in the Canadian wilderness with nothing but a hatchet to survive with. And he gets the job done. Spoiler alert. Yeah. Jerry, I mean, that idea of self-sufficiency is one that... What do you think resonates with kids about it so much, because kids usually don't experience that?
Well, I read once quite a while ago, and I can't document it, so we may have to have some fake news here. But I read about the psyche of a child, that's part of their growing up and being able to be independent and going away from mom and dad and leaving the home is... They're learning that through these books and trying to establish that in their own world, or pretending that they can do that. So like A View from Saturday is another one that their friends and, you know, they're talking about how they can accomplish different parts of their world and be successful and go away from mom and dad or away from their parents and solve those problems, mm-hmm. And be confident in that independence.
Well, and James is on the line, and Roland, he wanted to talk about My Side of the Mountain. Hi, James.
Hi. Yes, I was just going to call about My Side of the Mountain. I bet I read that thing 5 times.
Did you try to go out in the wilderness and reenact any of the skills that you learned from reading the book?
Well, I was a farm kid, so I was kind of doing that stuff all the time anyway.
Sure. Why do you think that kept pulling you back in over and over again?
Just what you were saying, every kid wants to be, you know, independent and show that they can do it themselves.
Well, James, thanks so much for calling and sharing. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Dick is on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Dick.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I was wondering if your guest had ever read Jonathan Livingston Seagull by Richard Bach. Was very inspirational for me in my career choice, and taught me that there is more to just learning to fly.
So your career choice, what do you do?
Well I was and still am to some extent a pilot and flight instructor. I've flown airlines, I've flown corporate, but one of the most rewarding aspects of aviation has been teaching, and that goes back to the story of Jonathan Livingston Seagull that I read when I was a young man.
Wow. Well, and remind us a little bit about the story, if you can.
Well, the seagull was somewhat of an outcast because he pushed the envelope, so to speak, of the abilities of a seagull. And it brought into the story a moralistic and bias and all kinds of things that you wouldn't attribute to a seagull. But Richard Bach did a lot of writing in the aviation genre, but Jonathan Livingston Seagull was a real breakthrough type of story, especially for me.
Well, Dick, thank you so much for sharing that with us today. I went through a whole Richard Bach phase as a teenager. He wrote a lot of really inspirational books. Let's go next to Larry in Tipton. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Charity. Love your topic today.
Hi, Larry. It's Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
We know each other.
What would you like to talk about, Larry?
And I was really pleased to hear Sarah say that she was a science fiction writer, and I didn't know that. I didn't know that she wrote children's books, but I am a great Jules Verne fan. 60 years ago, and the guy can tell you about how old I am, I read The Mysterious Island, and I got hooked on Jules Verne, and that I just love that book because it created so much imagination. I could just imagine myself on that island, and so even yet today, that still is the favorite book from when I was a child. So it instilled in me a great love of reading. And I'm afraid, I just fear that our children of that age, fifth, sixth, middle school age, are just not spending enough time. Yeah, the little ones, we read to them, and we've got the little ones into reading, but I'm afraid when they get into the upper grades, I just don't think they're spending enough time with that type of time spending the reading.
I think a lot of middle grade readers are reading. It's when they hit high school that we really lose them because they get so busy. Larry, did you read 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, too?
Yes, I read just about everything I could hold up on Jules Verne. It just was so great.
I remember that one.
You could just let your mind wander, and you could just imagine yourself in those situations.
Yeah.
And that, to me, was just wonderful.
Oh, Larry, thanks a lot for calling. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And, Jerry, I think there's another thread there in what Larry brings up, is that so many of these books take you beyond the world you know. I mean, this is really a way of exploring whether it's a realistic world or an imaginary world.
Right. So we all know that reading takes us places that we may or may not ever get to see. And that's part of the magic of opening a book and reading it and possibly becoming that character and being able to be challenged by that character in how they react or interact with the other characters in the book, and gives our reader tools to be possibly something or someone that they weren't before because of that. So we escape into those books as well.
Let's go to Elizabeth in Des Moines. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello.
What would you like to talk about?
Yeah, I just wanted to add to the conversation, kind of going on the thread you just brought up about imagination. When I was young, we didn't have Harry Potter. What we had was C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And that, for me, was hugely influential in kind of spawning the creativity and putting myself in someone else's shoes. So that one has always stuck with me, and I'm actually reading it to my kids now. So
nice. Which is your favorite book in the series, Elizabeth?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to probably have to say the original, because the scene with Aslan when he is close to dying, I won't give too much away, that has always just resonated with me. And I can still remember, as a young reader, just being so terrified and actually moved to tears for the first time reading a book. So I will have to say the original one, although I did read the entire series.
Yeah, well, for me, I read the whole series a number of times, and The Horse and His Boy is my favorite of that whole series.
So good.
The one that I've gone
good.
Back to again and again. So, Elizabeth, what do you think that series gave to you as you were growing up? I mean, was there a particular character you related to most?
I don't know if there was a particular character, of course, too. I mean, of course, the little girl, you know, there was two boys and a girl. But really, it
two
was
boys and two girls.
Two girls, sorry. Yes, two girls. I think it was just that sense of wonder that, you know, there's a world outside my immediate experience, and being transported into fantasy, really, was just incredible to me. I had never read a book like that before, where I was in a whole different world. So that, to me, was just miraculous. And I, of course, now am a big Harry Potter fan as well. But I just think, you know, I kind of date myself by saying this, but when I was growing up, we didn't have Harry Potter. And
yep.
So that was kind of the one that was for me. So,
oh, Elizabeth, thanks so much for your call. And, you know, it's interesting, Elizabeth, in talking about the Narnia series. That was, again, that was one of my big touchstones. But in that book with two girls and two boys, there was somebody for everybody in my family. So I always thought of my oldest brother as being a lot like Peter, and then my middle brother as being a lot like Edmund, and then I was a lot like Lucy. I don't think anybody really relates to Susan because she's too perfect. But it is interesting because I've also, one of the other books that was really powerful for me was Little Women when I was growing up. And of course, I think, of course, I really related to Jo March. And that's, you know, I think she's the character that most people really relate to. But
she's the previous generation's Meg Murray.
Right, right. But it was interesting because my daughter read it and she really liked it. But it didn't set her on fire the way that it set me on fire. And I thought, well, she's a lot more like Meg. Mm. It's not Meg Murray, but Meg in Little Women. And I thought, well, that wouldn't be as exciting then, yeah. Would it? But it is interesting how, you know, if you find that character that you can see yourself in, mm-hmm. that can really
or
resonate.
Or want to see yourself in.
Right. Yeah. We aspire.
Yes.
Yeah. One of those for me was Frances Hodgson Burnett's A Little Princess, and the main character's name was actually Sarah. And so I was just like, yep.
That one's just written for me.
Yep. It's my book.
All right. Kathy's on the line next in Waterloo. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, I'm heading to a doctor's appointment, so if I cut it short, you'll understand why. I grew up in Webster City, and the library there is beautiful, and if anybody ever gets a chance, that's the first thing they should do is go to the Kendall Young Library. But and ever the new knower, I would go to the basement where the youth was. Anyway, Lois Lenski books were my very favorite books. They were books about migrant workers, children who were struggling financially in their family, and I just related to them. We were we certainly didn't have any money, and I don't know if this is the reason or not, but I love biographies, and I heard your previous caller talking about Harry Potter. I won't say that I can't stand them. That's a bit strong, but I really just prefer reality, and I don't know if reading those books prompted that or if it was, you know, just my nature, and that's why I like those books.
Yeah, like
I just loved them.
Okay. Strawberry Girl and Shoe Fly Girl and The Prairie School, all of those. I could see how those would speak to readers that wanted, like, realistic books.
And she was one of the early Newbery Medal Award winners.
Yep.
Kathy, thank you so much. And, you know, Kathy brings up some of those very realistic books. I think Little House on the Prairie falls in that category, which is a real touchstone series for a lot of people. I don't know. I always feel like, particularly for those of us in the Midwest, but obviously it touches readers all over the world. And those were some of your books too, right, Sarah?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And those are books too that were some of the first books that I read when I became a real reader and that I've revisited a couple times as an adult. And they really speak to different things as you grow, like as you're an adult reader. Like as a kid, it's about Laura and her adventures. As an adult, it's all of a sudden a series about American expansionism and, you know, nationalism and you know, making the country out of prairie and stuff like that. So it's a really different read when you grow up.
Jerry, those are books that people are still reading today. Do you find that, is that something parents are pushing on their kids because we remember them fondly, or are kids naturally drawn to them still?
Well, all the books that have been talked about just fly off the shelves on a regular basis. So they're maybe mm-hmm. our go-to books as librarians, but they're also that idea of a parent rereading what was joyful for them or what spoke to them is a very apparent part of having children and being a parent, is sharing those things that you loved as a child and passing that on. And then they... You know, then our children become their own readers, and then they start challenging themselves to grow and read outside of that mom and dad's type of favorites. But they, moms and dads, want to have their children hear what was important to them.
Right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about the books that shaped us as young readers this hour. With me, Jerry Hyde, Youth Services Manager at the Ames Public Library, and Sarah Prineas, who is an author and works at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Oh, when Winchell first shouted, flash! But there's one day that I recall, though it was years ago. All my life I will remember it, I know. I'll never forget the day I read a book. It was contagious, 70 pages. There were pictures here and there, so it wasn't hard to bear. The day
it's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, in anticipation of the movie A Wrinkle in Time coming out, a lot of people are rereading that book, and it's a touchstone for so many readers from their teen years, from their upper elementary years. So this hour, we're talking about those touchstone books, the books that shape us as young readers, and we want to hear about your books. What books shaped you? With me, Jerry Hyde, the Youth Services Manager at the Ames Public Library, and Sarah Prineas. She is a middle grade and young adult author, best known for the Magic Thief trilogy, and she works at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. You can join us, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've got this from Brian, for me, Where the Red Fern Grows, mm-hmm. in fourth yeah. grade, which is such a beautiful and powerful book. And you know, it's a book that, spoiler alert, there are lots and lots and lots of tears involved in reading Where the Red Fern Grows often. And I think about that, Jerry. I mean, books that make you feel really deeply. I've always kind of felt like that kind of cathartic experience is emotional practice. I mean, you're building emotional resiliency in some ways. What do you think?
I would totally agree with that. Yes, so we get to feel all of our emotions when a good book read, you know, that you read a good book and you find that desperation of that character, like Julie and the wolves, you know, you feel that coldness and you feel that sense of failure she has when it doesn't work, you know, when what she's trying to do doesn't work, or when the animal is hurt and you build those empathy skills that we, you know, to be a well-rounded person, we all need to have those type of feelings, and you get to experience death in a book without actually having to experience it, but you get to practice it, if you would, and in a way that is a safe way, and you get to explore those emotions and kind of figure out why you do and why you feel the way you feel.
Yeah, we can't really talk about books where the dog dies in the end without talking
crying.
About the book where the spider dies at the end.
Yeah, Charlotte's Web.
Yes. Sorry, spoiler alert.
Well, or Bambi. I mean, when we were Bambi's thinking mother. About movies and stuff, I mean, I'm going to date myself. I was in the movie theater when Bambi was shot, and I remember where I was
Bambi's
sitting.
Mother.
Bambi's mother was shot with a rifle, and I can feel the pain that, and I remember still now I cry every time the spider dies. Charlotte dies.
Well, and Charlotte's Web is such a beautiful and wonderful book. But it's such an emotional journey, and there's just so much to be learned about friendship and the power of just one individual.
And it's not action. But it's not a lesson book. You know,
no.
It's not like, oh, we're teaching you about whatever.
It's subtle.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. I was just talking to Sarah about this before the show, in rereading some of the books that really I loved as a kid. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is one of those books. Kids still love it today. I reread it and I thought, this book is really heavy-handed with the lessons and the morality. And for the most part, I feel like those books aren't the ones that work for kids. I mean, those are the ones that grown-ups really like. Although that is totally an exception to the rule. Kids still love Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and I think because of all the candy.
True. And I think they also refer to the visual part of what they see, and they think the book is going to be like that. And I think many times our readers are disappointed in the book because the movie has set a visual experience for them that they don't receive in the book itself, or vice versa.
Yeah.
I know we talked about that when I read Harry Potter, the first one, and then went to the movie, it was just somewhat disappointing for me, the Quidditch game and that, because that's not how I imagined it to be, or the costuming. That visual experience brings in so much different types of things that are happening in your head and in your thought process of watching the story grow.
Well, and it's interesting. I mean, speaking of Harry Potter, and this goes back to something we were talking about earlier, there are many deaths in that series. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting for me. Now, of course, I wasn't a child when I first read that series. But it's a series that I love very much. And my kids have read it. It's been interesting to see which losses, which moments strike them the hardest and which ones strike me the hardest. Again, it's something that changes, I think, as you age and as you grow, you see very different responses.
Yeah, the first library director I worked with, she told me once that we only bring the experiences that we have to that book. And so what we read is the only thing that we can define that as is what our experience is that would relate to that particular experience. So if you don't know about death too much, death in a family or illness or something that the book is about or the emphasis of the book is about, then you can't really identify with it. So it was a lesson learned that I carry with me and tell a lot of our families or adults that come in and wanting books for their children or that they're concerned about whether or not this book is right for their child or not right. Or too serious, and we have that discussion about, it depends on what your child's experiences are like.
Let's go back to the phones. Eileen is on the line in Vinton. Hi, Eileen.
Hi. The book that changed and shaped me was The Diary of Anne Frank.
Mm. Oh, somebody just mentioned that one on Twitter, too.
Oh, okay. Well, my dad gave it to me when I was 12 years old. I'm now 64 years old. He was a veteran of World War II. He spent 3 years of his life in the Philippines and New Guinea. And his message to me, and after I read it, I was changed, was that he hoped that I would never have to face, that I would never have to come face to face with evil, and that I would live my life and realize that I was a free person. And I realize it, and I don't know, it's just emotional because when I read that book, I truly knew in my heart that there was a 12-year-old girl out there before me who had faced evil and fear, and she wrote about it. So I loved the book, and I have shared it with many kids. I worked in education for years, and now my grandson is 12, and I'm going to have him read it. So that's the book that I think really did shape my life.
Yeah, Eileen, thank you so much for sharing. I think that's a powerful one for so many people. And, I mean, it's such an important history lesson that everyone needs to learn. Here's an email from Stacy and Marion. A book I remember is All Quiet on the Western Front from early in my teen years. I remember it today, and I'm 44. It gave me a sense of what so many had gone through during World War I. On a completely different note, Salem's Lot from Stephen King was also so well written that I was scared reading it. I love it. This one is from Reed. At the beginning of a long career as a librarian, Weetsy Bat came out. I was captured by this edgy young adult novel, recommended it then and recommend it now. Strikes me as one of those titles that threaten adult sensibilities. A good thing in my view. And let's just throw out a couple of titles from today that kids are really loving, really moved by. I mean, The Hunger Games is one of those. And again, that's one that scared a lot of adults. Jerry, can you think of a few books right now that you would recommend for young readers who are at this point in their reading?
Well, there are some very wonderful picture book biographies that kind of give you a touch of who that character was and who in real life, and kind of displays or reflects them. And so you can kind of identify with their lives and what many of them are artists. The Silent Day, Silent Dream, an artist about a deaf, a biography about a deaf mute by Alan Say, was very moving for me as an adult. Just recently was published last year, and just the pictures and the struggle that this particular person had was just very well written and shared in the picture, in the illustrations along the way. I think Jason Reynolds is probably one of my favorite today authors that are going on. His A Long Way Down, it's about a person that his brother has just been shot, and there's three rules that this community has, and that's no crying, no snitching, and to get revenge. And so he's going down this elevator, and he's gotten a gun out to get his revenge, and he's thinking about what he's going to do. And at each floor, he meets a ghost of his past or someone that has done. And again, that being in a place and reading what's going on and thinking about what's happening. I mean, because it's somewhat based on true life as far as some of our families and people in the world.
You mentioned Jason Reynolds, and we've had All Iowa Reads for quite a while, but this is the inaugural year for All Iowa Reads for young readers, right?
Correct.
Yep, that's right. And Jerry and I were both on the committee to select this year's All Iowa Reads books. And when she mentioned Jason Reynolds, I did a little chair dance because his book that we selected is so great. It's called Ghost, and it's a middle grade book, and it is inspiring. It's about this kid named Castle Cranshaw, and the book starts with an opening gun, like the start of a race, but it's his father shooting at him and his mother, and he has to run to get away. So this is a kid who has trauma in his life, but he's funny and impulsive and talented. And the book ends with the starting gun of a race too. So it comes a perfect circle and just an absolutely brilliant read. And that's our first middle grade read for the All Iowa Reads.
All right, and there are other selections for other ages?
Well, actually, it's kind of cool that we brought up Anne Frank because young adults is The Girl in the Blue Coat by Monica Hesse, who has Iowa roots. And it's about a girl in Amsterdam during World War II who sort of reluctantly gets drawn into the resistance. So she's kind of somebody who's on the other side from Anne Frank. She was helping people who were hiding from the Nazis during World War II. And it's partly about her journey as a person because she's not a particularly nice person at the beginning of the book or at the end of the book because she's trying to make it. She's trying to survive. But she ends up finding the strength to help people like Anne Frank.
So as you've expanded All Iowa Reads for young readers, just give me a thumbnail sketch of how that program's going to work, Sarah.
Well, we introduced our chosen books to teachers and librarians, I think last week or the week before. And so as we come into the summertime, you're going to see book groups and reading groups at schools and libraries who take up these books for discussion and make them part of their sort of reading conversations.
And Jerry, how did you guys decide which books?
Well, it was a year-long process, and each of the committee members brought two or three books for each category, for the youth and for the teen. And then we talked about them, book-talked them to the committee, and we narrowed them down to like 10 of them for each group. And then we were, each of the member of the committee had to read all the 10, and then we came back together and we talked about who our top vote getter was. And it was very inspiring to talk at the table with other librarians and teachers and authors that brought different things, again, bringing different parts of their lives to the table to talk about what it was about that book that they liked and didn't like. And coming together and making a decision on one was quite a miracle, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, considering all of our differences and both Sarah and I, we wanted Ghosts from the beginning.
Yes, pretty much.
So we were very happy with both of them. So
yes.
We have just a couple of minutes left, and I want to get through a few more suggestions from listeners. Dennis is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Dennis.
Hi there.
What books would you
the
like to talk
for
about?
Me.
Yeah.
When I was 12, I was given the first four Tarzan books by Edgar Rice Burroughs. And I knew the character from the movies. So, of course, I went immediately, read them all in 2 weeks, 15 feet off the ground in my silver leaf maple tree.
Oh, nice.
These are extraordinary reads. I found out there were more. I went to the Cedar Rapids Public Library. They have Tarzan books. And the librarian pulled her glasses down on her nose. She sneered at me. We don't care, those are sub-literature.
Oh,
I was
no.
so furious. When I learned you could buy books and keep them, I now have over 7,000.
Oh, wow.
So you get to be your own librarian, Dennis.
That's right.
All right. Thanks a lot for sharing that. There were, I think my brother read 27 Tarzan books.
My husband read them, too.
Yep. Here's a tweet from Henry. Flowers for Algernon definitely inspired me. It gave me a look into how people with different challenges can be treated and made me reflect on the way I treated others. It also inspired my love of novels, still a favorite book to this day. From Jolie, I've always loved To Kill a Mockingbird, read when I was in third grade on my own, and always dreamed of having a dad like Atticus. Love my own dad, but Atticus was a whole nother level. This one's from Bree. She said, I enjoyed A Mango-Shaped Space by Wendy Mass and Carolyn B. Cooney books. So some more recent books. There's so many great ones out there. This one is from Adam. He says, I live in Waukee, and I'd like to share my love of a book series called Circle of Magic by Tamara Pierce.
Oh, Pierce. Yeah.
The books were about a group of children who were each outcasts in their own ways, but grow to be great young magicians. The book contains magic, teamwork, and the relationships between mentor, student, and friend. And we only have a moment left, but these books do stay with us and shape us. A lot of people are very excited about A Wrinkle in Time coming out. You know, we were talking earlier about how you grow beyond the books, maybe, but Jerry, you said sometimes you grow back. So do you think we should all go back and maybe take a look at one of the books that we loved as a kid, Sarah?
I think I need to go back and reread A Little Princess again, because it's been, 40 years.
How about you, Jerry?
I agree. I reread books that I grew up with every day at the library. So I think it's very important to choose that perfect book for the perfect person. So at that time.
Jerry Hyde, thank you so much. Jerry,
thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Jerry Hyde, Youth Services Manager at the Ames Public Library. And Sarah Prineas, thank you.
You're welcome. And you're playing Hobbit music, which is a book I would have mentioned. Hobbit.
There are so many to talk about. Sarah Prineas, middle grade and young adult author, best known for her Magic Thief trilogy. And she sells books at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.